Welcome, everyone. My name is Jonna, and welcome to Datadogs.club. Datadogs.club turns 3 today. Yoo-hoo.
Hey.
So we're talking about Datadogs.club. And for this occasion, we've decided to turn the mic around. And we have a special guest today, Alexei Grigorev himself. Oh. So welcome, Alexei. And
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes. How does it feel to be in the guest chair?
Strange.
I mean,
it's not the first time I'm a podcast guest, but yeah.
But on your own podcast.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't think I need to introduce Alexei too much. He's the founder of Datatalks.club, as we all know.
Maybe we should also mention some information about the host.
Yes.
Because maybe not everyone knows that Johanna is actually the mastermind behind all the podcast episodes. So, like, all the questions that you hear me asking, Johanna prepares them. So thanks a lot for doing that.
Yeah, no problem. It's actually quite fun sometimes to re-listen to the actual podcast because I prepare the questions and then, you know, see what you make of it. Sometimes you stick to them and sometimes you just, you know, sway. Yeah. No, it's been fun. This time the questions for this episode have been prepared mostly by the community. So we've asked for questions. You can still submit questions on Slido. And it's going to be like an AMA, so ask me anything for Alexei. So, but before we go into talking about the community and Datadogs.club, maybe Alexei, can you tell us a bit about yourself, like your background and your career journey?
It's funny. So usually I ask that question, right?
Yes.
Now I need to answer this too. And I'm wondering how much far back I should go. So I'll probably start with, I graduated with a degree in information technology and I studied information technology. And after graduation, I worked as a Java developer for a few years. And my last work as a Java developer was at a bank. It was a Swiss bank. And they have highly regulated processes for everything. So while the job was interesting, it was also sometimes mundane and like kind of boring. And I thought, okay, like, did I study for 5 years to do Java? Like, why did I study all this math? And then during this time, this platform Coursera appeared, and one of the courses there was machine learning. So I took that course and I recognized that, okay, this looks like something I want to do. So I took this course. I took some other courses. I ended up doing a master's degree in business intelligence. This is how actually I ended up in Germany. So like the second year of this degree, of this program, was in Germany, in Berlin. And I liked the city so much that I decided to stay. And since then, since graduation, I work as a data scientist. I worked, well, up to the point where I fully focused on Datadogs Club, which happened like this year. So during this time, working as a data scientist, still, like, while my title was data scientist, I was doing like pretty much everything, which included like software engineering, data engineering, ML engineering, data science too. But funny thing is, like, my last work was at OLX. I worked there for 4.5 years. And over this time, over this period, I trained the model only once.
Wow.
So, yeah. So I was mostly doing engineering stuff there, even though my title was a data scientist. So it's a fun fact. So, and now since April, I fully focus on Datadogs Club.
That is really exciting. Do you still, like, what language did you use, like, in your job? Probably not Java, right? Like, you probably specialized on Python, I assume.
Well, right now, mostly English.
No, I mean programming language.
Yeah. So, like, for Datadogs Club. Yeah, sometimes. Well, we use Python for courses, and I sometimes occasionally write little scripts to help with moderation, like with some other things, like, for example, for the courses that we do. So all the scripts are in Python. So for me, like, the to-go language is Python.
Yeah.
I think I still remember some Java. I can still do a bit of JavaScript. So some of the code that we use for Datadogs Club, for example, the code for generating certificates.
Hmm.
Like, when you finish a course, you get the certificate. So that code is written with JavaScript. But yeah, it's mostly Python.
Yeah. I started myself with Python, with Java, like way back, but like I didn't stay for very long. So Python is definitely the better language, I think, especially for machine learning. Cool. Yeah, thank you so much, Alexei. I think we might actually jump into the first question. And we have questions both collected on Slack and via LinkedIn on Slido. And I think we start with the Slido one. So the first question is, happy birthday, DataTalks.club. Thank you. What are the plans for the future?
Yeah, so luckily I had access to these questions before the interview, because otherwise this and some other ones would be, I would have troubles answering. So right now, I want to focus on making it sustainable. So since this is my main job right now, I want to also make sure I don't starve. So I have money to survive.
Yeah.
And Berlin is not a cheap city.
Yeah.
So for me right now, so I'm focusing on making it sustainable and making sure that there is enough income. So for me and for the team, so there are also two people working for DataTalks Club.
Yeah.
Francis and Valeria. So Francis is the community manager. So he takes care for, he's basically running everything behind the scenes. Like all the events are organized by him. Like all the YouTube videos are published, like when we need to publish something or edit. You know, like he edits a lot of videos. Like basically he's doing pretty much everything. So I would not be able to run the community without his help.
Yeah. Massive shout out to Francis. Yeah. Like he's pretty amazing. Yeah.
So if anyone of you were ever a speaker or a guest in DataTalks Club, so Johanna was, usually Francis takes care of reaching out and, you know, organizing everything. And then we have Valeria. So Valeria takes care of the newsletter, the social media content, and she helps a lot with other things. So I need to pay them. Of course, they like what they do, but yeah, they're... Okay. It's a job.
Yeah.
So I need to pay them and I need to also get money. So for me, for us, the focus is right now to see how to make it work. So far, it's been good, but I still want to focus on getting more sponsors for the community.
Yeah.
While also trying to not overdo it, because I think if we push too heavy for monetization, it will not help attract more people, right? So we need to find the right balance. So what we do right now is good. We just need to find more sponsors. So I think we kind of find the right balance, but we just need to find more companies who want to support us. So that's my main activity right now, main focus. But apart from that, of course, we have a lot of activities. We want to continue doing these activities. And one of the things that quite often comes up right now, people ask for an LLM course.
Oh.
LLM Zoom Camp. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So could be. I cannot promise anything because I'm not right now. I'm not so sure if this is just a hype and everyone wants that because it's a hype thing. Probably it would be wise to wait for 6 to 12 months to see what happens. If the hype dies out or it's still there. And if it's still there, it's possible that we consider making another course. But also, for example, we are quite lucky with the three courses we have. Because, for example, right now we are running Machine Learning Engineering course, ML Zoom Camp.
Yeah.
And it does not change significantly from year to year.
Yeah.
So we need to maintain the content a little bit.
Yeah.
But most of the content is the content that I recorded 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So we're kind of lucky. And with LLM, things change every day, right?
Yes, it's so fast going. And so, it's still such a new field when things come up. Yeah, no, I agree. But
could be a nice topic.
It could be also broader, not only LLM, but more in general AI, right? That might be very exciting. I didn't know that. But it's quite a hype at the moment. Yeah, also with the reason that I got this job is basically that I once mentioned to Alexei that I listen to every episode of the podcast because I'm an avid podcast lover. And I do fully agree that just some podcasts just have ads, a couple of ads are fine, but then if it gets too much, it's just not good. So I agree there needs to be a balance and you also don't want to abuse people, right? In mm-hmm. some way. So, but you also need, like, the creator also needs to live. I think that's definitely a fine balance. But yeah, very cool. I think cool. Then let's actually move to the next question, which kind of touches on what we've just discussed. How do you think data jobs will change as different GPT-like services come in play and extend skills of data professionals?
Well, that's an interesting thing. And of course, nobody knows, right? So we will only see that maybe in a year or two when people start using them actively. Because right now, even though like it's quite a hot area, some data scientists are still hesitant to try them.
Yeah. Right?
So, but once the community gets more adoption, then it will become interesting. And I recently spoke with a friend of mine, also my ex-colleague. He's running his own startup right now. And he says right now the main challenge when hiring, when evaluating candidates, is ChatGPT. Because everyone can just copy and paste the take-home test. And GPT will just provide the solution, right?
Yeah.
And so they're thinking what to do with this. And I like the metaphor he used. Like, for example, there is weed, which is considered a drug, marijuana, right? And many countries try to fight it. But some countries say, okay, let's just embrace it and allow people to use it. Because like there is no point in fighting it. People will still smoke weed, right? And he was comparing weed with ChatGPT by saying like, let's legalize ChatGPT. Let's not forbid it. Because like, okay, you can say people, you cannot use ChatGPT, but people will still use it, right?
Yeah.
But what about just saying, hey, like for our take-home test, you can use ChatGPT. You just have to tell us what prompts did you use? How exactly did you use it? What were the problems? Like what were the cases when it was not correct and you needed to fix something? So tell us about that. And I think this is a nice approach. So instead of saying, hey, like ChatGPT will take our jobs, we should just learn to use it and learn to accept it and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's we'll see how it goes, because I imagine like most things, like I don't know, mundane exploratory data analysis, or I don't know, just training a simple model with ChatGPT, you can just ask it and then it will give you the code and then you just use it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still not ideal. It's still buggy. It still hallucinates. It comes up with functions that do not exist and whatnot.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, let's see.
Yeah. It's very interesting that you say weed, because I just moved to the Netherlands. And of course, like the Netherlands is one of the most progressive countries with this, right? Yeah, but that's actually a really nice approach. I like that. And it's kind of, I think, you know, many companies use like whiteboard challenges for like their hiring. And it's the same kind of, you know, in your normal life, you just Google, right? Mm-hmm. And like in some way, like ChatGPT is not that much more than Googling. I mean, it can nicely give you like something nicely formatted that you can just hand over. But still, I think it's a very good idea, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. So then let's move on to the next question that goes back to datatalks.club. From your perspective, how can members best contribute to and benefit from the involvement in datatalks.club?
Yeah, so this is, I think the best thing you can do is be active on Slack. Because like for Datatalks Club, Slack is like the center of the community. Of course, we have many, many different activities, like podcasts, courses, but it kind of still centers around Slack. There are questions in Slack that sometimes are left without answers, and I cannot physically go and answer, even though sometimes I do know the answer. I cannot just go and answer that. And it's already happening to a pretty large extent. I see a lot of community members jumping on and answering questions. So if more of us do that, I think the world will become a better place. And actually, like, why I suggest that? Of course, it's good that you help. But I look back at my career and I think about things that helped me in my career. So when I just started my journey as a Java developer, the first thing I did was joining a Java community. So it was online forums. Yep. And I used that forum to ask questions. But I did not have that many questions. And I noticed that a lot of people were asking questions, and I was able to answer some of these questions. But also I noticed there were questions that I was not able to answer. And some of these questions were interesting. And I thought, like, how about I do a bit of research and find out how to actually answer these questions?
Wow.
So I set aside like half an hour every day to do that, to help people. And over time, it accumulated, like I learned a lot of new things. Like by just doing a bit of research, doing a bit of Googling and trying some things and like figuring out what is wrong and how to help a person, I was able to learn so much myself that the next job, I already like, I had no difficulties whatsoever in passing the job interview. And wow. Also they, like I doubled my salary because I was so, it was so easy for me to pass the interview. And I was so confident that I'll be not just qualified for this job. I could do everything that I needed. So, and it's because of the communities, right? And the same thing happened when I became a data scientist. So for my first, when I got my first job as a data scientist, I also joined a data science community. And I was doing the same thing. So I was just hanging out in, it was a Slack community. So I was hanging out in this Slack community. It was a Russian speaking community called Open Data Science, which actually inspired me to create Datadogs Club. I think one of the questions is about that. So I'll probably talk about that later. And so I was just hanging out there, asking my own questions, but also helping others. And it helped me too. Like it helped me tremendously. So what you can do to benefit from the involvement in the community is just go there and ask questions, even though maybe you don't know the answer, right? And you can add a disclaimer. Hey, I have not dealt with this myself, but I did a quick Googling and this is what I found out. So here is the result, right? So it will help everyone. So that's one thing. But like apart from Slack, we have many other things. So for example, we have three courses. And if you graduated from some of these courses and you want to help with the course, you can help by maybe you want to be a teaching assistant. Right. So that's also an option. So you can ping me in Slack and say, hey, like I really enjoyed doing the Meloposum camp. Can I be a teaching assistant there? Or you can just say, again, hang out in the course channels and answer questions from other community members. That will be super helpful. Then we have a few things like we want to run a competition. So last year we did a Kaggle competition.
Mm-hmm.
It was a deep learning competition. So it was like we needed to classify images of different kitchen utensils like forks, spoons, or just kitchen stuff like cups into these categories. So there is a picture of a spoon and the model needs to say that it's a spoon, right? It was a very fun competition and we want to do something similar this year. So if you have some ideas, what could be the competition about and how to get the data for this competition, which is the most difficult part, then yeah, please reach out and let's think how to do that.
I remember you collected the data last year, right? It was via phone app. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Maybe this year it could be something with LLMs too. Because like with LLMs, you can, let's say you have a lot of text data and you can label this data with LLMs or generate data with LLMs. So it could be that too. Another thing we have is called Project of the Week. So this is the idea behind Project of the Week is more like most of the content we have is we show you how to do something and you repeat. So for example, we have workshops or we have the courses and in the workshop, there is a video and somebody is doing something and you follow along, right? But Project of the Week is different. So it's more like do it yourself thing. You get some instructions or like, more like it's not something you have to do today. It's more like a suggestion. This is what you can do today. For example, let's say we want you to learn, I don't know, FastAPI or something like that, like a new framework. And there are some things you can do to learn this thing. Like we give you a set of suggestions and every day you try to look something up on Google, try to do something. And then every day you can say, okay, this is my progress. And then the idea is after 7 days, you have a complete project that you can put in your portfolio. So that's the idea behind Project of the Week. And we have quite a few community members who are active there, who are helping a a lot with that and coming up with project ideas. So one of them, Adonis, is actually right now in this live chat. Hi, Adonis. And the other one is Liliana. So thanks a lot for your help. But the reason I'm saying that, if you have some ideas or you want to learn something new, you can help with organizing this project of the week too. Yeah, there's actually a lot more. I think I can talk for hours about what you can do.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of other questions, right?
Yeah, data tech stack is massive. Like, and I'm always surprised like how you do all of these things, because we also have like the webinars and the podcast, like, right? Like, so people think they are interesting. If people think they are interesting, they can also like probably reach out to Francis. We're always looking for new guests. But I think in general, the one thing that how people can benefit is, which data tech club like uses quite a bit, is this learning in public. So always, if you learn something, tweet it or talk about it, and we will probably also like, you know, promote it. I think it's also a big part of the Zoom cams.
Thanks for mentioning this.
To make it public. Yeah. So then we move on. What are the main lessons learned from your experience in building the DTC online community?
Yeah, so that was also, I was lucky to be able to see this question before the interview, because it's like a very difficult question to answer, to be honest. So yeah, and I did a bit of brainstorming and I came up with a few things. So I remember at the beginning, the goal was quite ambitious. So the goal was to create a community for all data people, which includes like data analysts, data engineers, data scientists, data product managers, ML engineers, like everyone who deals with data. But with time, I realized that it's too broad, right? It's not possible to be that broad. And there are already communities, for example, like there's a community called Locally Optimistic, who focuses more like on data product manager and data analysts. And then there is an MLOps community who focuses more on MLOps. So we also kind of needed to focus on something. So for Data Talks Club, it was more like beginner-friendly, hands-on learning for a lot of our content. So focus is more like on people who start their career or continue rather than who are advanced in their career, and with a lot of focus on hands-on stuff and with focus on engineering aspects of data, like ML engineering, data engineering, MLOps. So these are engineering heavy things where you need to code a lot. And our podcast is still kind of, well, it's not so super technical.
Yeah.
But still, we talk about like careers and things like that, that also appeal more to like maybe beginner and intermediate level of audience rather than like professionals.
Yeah.
So I guess with time, we actually found some focus.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. So one of the lessons is like, you cannot be too ambitious. You need to focus on something. Then another thing is moderation. So I did not expect that moderation would take so much time. Like, there was a funny story that a few times people tried to use the community as a dating app, as a dating website.
What?
I don't know if there were any success stories, but I know that there were unsuccessful stories when ladies in the community did not like the attention they received from some community members. And yeah, of course, this is not why you join a professional community. To get private messages saying, hey, QT, how about a date, right?
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I had to deal with this stuff. So maybe there was a successful case, like a love story, but I'm not aware of that. Most of the time, it was unsolicited attention.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And like in general, moderation is like people are trying to promote their services.
Yeah.
Either in public or in private messages. And in private messages, it's more difficult because I don't see that, right?
Yeah.
So in public, I can just remove the post.
Yeah.
But if somebody is trying to send unsolicited promotion through direct messages, it's very difficult to catch that. So sometimes they send this promotion message to me too. And then I know what to do, right? But if they're careful and see, okay, like this person is an admin, I will not send him a message. And send to like other people, then so please, like if something like that happens, please let Francis or me know about that, and we will ban this this person, because it's against our community guidelines to send us a listed promotion messages in DM. Yeah, but I also did a bit of automation with that. So when somebody joins the general channel, when somebody joins the community and immediately jumps to the general channel and posts like a big promotional message, I already have a script, a bot, that removes that and sends an automatic direct message to that person saying, hey, it's against the rules. We have these channels. This is how the messages should be formatted, like if you want to publish something. So for me, it's just a matter of adding a special reaction to this post, and then the bot handles that. So that was fun to create. Yeah, I guess this too. Also, I'm still trying to figure out, like, what was surprising for me is like how eager people were to join the community and participate in different activities and also do something too in the community. That's really cool.
Yeah,
I'm still trying to think how to encourage this, recognize and encourage this and reward these active participants. So one thing is inviting them to the podcast.
Yeah.
But probably there is more we can do. So I'm still thinking about that. But it's really rewarding to see that people are very active in the community and are doing something for the community too. So it's really cool. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And thanks, Adonis, one more time. I know you're here. You're listening. You're doing a lot for this community. Thanks.
Yeah, I think in general, people are quite happy to, so at least for me, like, you know, people have an interest. And if they find like people that have a similar interest, it's just really great. Although like you said, there might be like some, I don't know. Yeah. It's always good to have a code of conduct to kind of, you know, guide these conversations. Yeah,
please don't use Datadog's Club as a dating website. Like Tinder works much better. Just try that one.
Oh my God. All right. Cool. So let's just move on. What was the motive behind starting the club and the Zoom camps? I think we've touched briefly on that already. Yeah.
So yeah, for me, as I said, communities were quite a big part of my life and career. So they helped me a lot. And I was quite active in this Russian-speaking community called Open Data Science. And sadly, I could not find anything similar in the English-speaking space, which were with like a community that was also active, that was also on Slack. And my initial idea was to create something similar to that. But so actually the story is like how it happened is I was doing some career consultations. A lot of people were reaching out to me on LinkedIn saying, hey, I'm a data analyst. I want to become a data scientist. Or I'm a software engineer, I want to become a data engineer, or I don't know, help me figure out what I want from life, things like that. And I would, back then, it was during COVID.
Mm.
So I also kind of wanted to talk to people, like sitting at home was not fun.
Yes.
And so I was doing these free career consultations, which involved like talking to a person and then like sending them a summary. I'm not doing that now, but back then it was fun. And then I did like 30 of these consultations and I thought it would be very nice to have a place where all these people can hang out and help each other. Cause like if I try to help everyone, it's not scalable, right? So I cannot help every single person.
Yeah. And it might also be repetitive or something. Yeah. Yeah.
It becomes very repetitive because like, for example, for like, how do I become a machine learning engineer? The answer is like, I don't know, go buy my book, right? But it's, people might find this answer annoying because it's like very promotional. Anyways, so I was thinking like if there was a space where all these people can hang out and help each other, and it would be more like not me helping everyone, but people would help each other. So for example, I helped somebody and that person would help somebody else, right? And then that person in turn would help somebody else. And this is one day I woke up, I registered this Slack community. I went to GoDaddy. I bought a domain. I think it costed like 15 euros or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put a link. I did not advertise it anywhere. I put this link to my LinkedIn page. I did not make a post. It was just in the description. And I put it in my GitHub. Right. And then I started seeing what happens. And people were joining it, right?
So wow.
They would accidentally see this link, or somebody else would say, hey, like, I found this cool community, join it. And then, like, in a week, maybe there was 100 people there. Like, in a month, it was more than a few hundred. And it was, like, I did not actively promote it. So people, would, like, community members would just say, hey, like, there's this cool place, check it out. And so it was very motivating. And at some point, a friend of mine asked if I know a place where he can give a talk. So, come over, give a talk. And then, like, since then, it was like our first webinar / workshop.
Yeah.
And then since then, we started having regular activities, like regular events. And I think the other part of the question was about the Zoom camps, right?
Yeah.
So I always wanted to do a course. So, like, when I was in this open data science community, there was a very good course called mlcourse.ai. It's also available in English. So I did this in Russian, but it's also translated. And it was a free course with focus on the theory behind machine learning, with a lot of coding. Also, there was a competition. And it was so well organized. And the main thing that I liked about that was that it was community driven. So there was, of course, like the project lead, the course lead, but also lessons were prepared by different community members. And these community members were helping each other in Slack when the course was running. I thought it's so cool. Like, it's such a great thing. Like, the course is for free. People help each other. And then people share stories like, okay, they did this. And then how they found like a great job after finishing this course. And I thought, like, it's so cool. I want to have something in our community too. And also, I think I mentioned the book. So I wrote a book about machine learning engineering at some point. And this book was not selling well. It's still not selling well. Because, like, it's very hard to compete against other really great books, because there are so many good books about machine learning. Now, in retrospect, I think maybe it did not make much sense to write another one, because there were so many of them already.
Plus, you created the courses. Now they are basically competing to the book, right? Basically.
Yeah. But I was thinking, like, how can I promote the book, right?
Right.
What's the best way of doing that? And like these two ideas, like there was this course that I really liked, and now I have a book that I want to promote. They kind of came together. I thought, how about I make a course based on the book?
Right. Yeah.
And then it would help with promoting the book. It will help with promoting the community, and it will help, you know, do what I wanted, like that other course. And I ran like, I think it was a post on LinkedIn or like something like that. So I did not put any effort into that. I just wanted to check if there is interest, and there was a lot of interest. So I thought, okay, I'm doing that. So this is how we did the first course, ML Zoom Camp. As I said, it did not help with promoting the book. I mean, people knew about the book, but not many of them were actually buying it. Because like the course is for free, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's.
Yeah, like, why pay for a book? Like, I don't think I would pay for a book, to be honest. But and to be honest, like, I don't get a lot of money from this, from selling the book. It did help to some extent with promoting. Like, without the course, even fewer people would buy it. But now, yeah. Actually, some people say, hey, like, I buy this book and I use it as a textbook for the course, which is cool.
Yeah. How much do you think that COVID kind of contributed to the fact that it's an online community? Like, would you have created like a meetup or something in Berlin otherwise?
No.
Okay, so it's not a COVID baby.
it is a COVID baby. I don't think people would so eager to join an online community if it was today, for example.
Yeah.
Like the timing was right. Even though for me, the idea was from the beginning to create an online community, the fact that it was during the COVID helped. Because right now, I think during the COVID, like at the beginning, it was kind of okay. But then, like, in 2020, it was okay. 2020 first year was already like, hey, so much stuff happening online. Like, I have this. But this community already had some momentum, right? So there were already community members, like the courses and so on. So I think being in this, starting during the COVID times helped, especially in September. So I remember, so summer was fine. And people were hoping that, you know, the normal life comes back.
Yes. Yeah.
But then in September, the cases started to go up again.
Yeah.
And like everyone was locked at home again. And yes, it was just the right timing. So I don't think it would do as well now if, let's say, if I started Datadox Club today, I don't think it would do as well as 3 years ago.
Yeah. Although like on the other hand side, like I think a lot of communities were created, at least, you know, I'm coming from the podcast side, like, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of podcasts were created during COVID, but they were all like, they all stopped now. Mm-hmm. So I think it is kind of like a badge, or like it is something special that this community is still vibing, like because a lot of didn't survive the COVID craze, right? So
maybe if it was just the podcast, it wouldn't be active. Yeah,
that's true.
But
yeah,
we had too many other things.
Yeah. So that's part of the business model, right? I guess it's so many things. Cool. So then an interesting one, what typical, not extraordinary success stories of your students were in a last year?
Not extraordinary. Like usual.
Yeah.
Well, we had cases when people wanted to switch their careers and they did. So I don't know what else to tell, like somebody. So for example, just yesterday, one of the guests, podcast guests, Marijn, I interviewed him. The talk, the interview was called Hacking Your Data Career. So Marijn Marcus, it was like a year or two ago. So he reached out to me through LinkedIn saying that he attended a conference by Data Amsterdam. And then somebody on that conference approached him saying, hey, like I listened to your interview on Data Talks Club and this interview changed my life. Like he got so inspired that he switched his career. Now he works as a data engineer. So not only that interview, but he also did our data engineering bootcamp, Zoom camp, and he changed his career. And then Marijn reached out to me saying, hey, this is such a cool thing to hear when somebody approaches you on the conference and says like, look, not only I know you, but also you changed my life.
Wow. Wow, that so is pretty much the dream, right? Like, that
yeah,
is...
right. So these things, and like, it's a typical, not extraordinary story. There were, of course, stories when like there was somebody like from school still, like he was a student at school, and then he did our ML Engineering Zoom camp and he got an internship and then he did pretty well there, but then he decided, okay, I want to study at university and he left the internship. So I think it's pretty cool when people earlier in their career, like even before the university, already have access to materials like that, can learn something and then already be ready to do a job. Right? I don't think it's a typical situation. I don't think most of our community members and students are school students.
Yeah.
I think, usually, most of the students are more, they're not students anymore, right? So they're already working in some role and they want to change.
Yeah. I mean, in general, I think podcasts are good. They're usually like, why I listen to them is like because of your inspiration or motivation, right? Like, it doesn't need to be like, oh, I changed my career after that. But like, I often like, you know, I wake up in the morning, just don't want to work. And then I listen to someone who like, you know, did something amazing and I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, you know, this person like did this amazing thing, so I can go and like finish this analysis or whatever. So sometimes it's even like, yeah, small things, right? So cool, very cool. Yeah, I do think that these communities like impact so many people in so many ways, which is good. It's really good. What topics or trends in the data world are you most excited about exploring in upcoming club events or interviews?
So yeah, the thing with me is I'm not really interested in chasing hype topics. That's why only like 1 month ago, we had our first interview about LLMs, which were super, it was super late for like considering how long ChatGPT has been around. So we were super late to the party with an LLM interview. So the way I usually do it, or we usually do it, is I'm more interested in interviewing a specific person.
Yeah.
And then see what kind of topics they want to share. And then usually there are a few things anyone can talk about, And you, Johanna, know more than anyone that, because you do these initial calls with our guests to explore what things they can share.
Yeah.
So for me, it's more like a person and then figuring out what this person can talk about, what could be unique that we haven't done previously, or maybe we have done something previously, but it can be like a different angle slightly.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, I don't know what exactly, like, I'm not really following trends. And we recently did two talks about LLMs. It was a coincidence, right? Because, like, in both these cases, there were specific people I wanted to interview. And turned out that in both these cases, the topic was LLM. And they were not conflicting with each other. So they were slightly different. So this is how I like to approach that. But yeah, maybe you can suggest some topics. So for example, if there is a topic that you're interested in and we haven't done a podcast interview about that, yeah, just reach out to somebody of us and suggest that. And also, if you know a speaker who can talk about that, it would be even better.
Yeah, and make sure that it really has not been suggested, you know, go through the whole history of previous. No kidding.
It's kind of difficult. I think it's okay to repeat a little bit, right?
Yeah, no, so
like if we talk about mentoring 3 years ago, right? So maybe like we can do another podcast episode about mentoring from a different person, right?
So exactly, like because it's always a different person, so it's definitely a different angle.
Because we would run out of topics by now.
Yes, we would. I mean, we hear from LLMs and like everywhere at the moment, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think.
Maybe non, it's not a good idea to have like 2-3 more LLM talks.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. The next question is, do you have a funny story to share that happened in the 3 years in Data Talks at .club? That comes from Antonis, actually. That's a question from Antonis.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I don't know, for me, the most funny story was like that people considered using Datadog Club as a dating website. Like, I could not even imagine that this would happen.
Yeah.
Right? It just did not occur to me at all that, of course, I did not think of putting this on the website or in our code of conduct, in the community guidelines. It just did not occur to me that it's possible that somebody might use a professional community to reach out to. In this case, it was a male reaching out to female participants. Yeah, it's kind of funny, but also gross.
Yes. So,
I don't know. But it was memorable, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Usually these people don't join the community for the professional part in the first place.
I would imagine, yes.
That's my experience, like, you know, with communities and like, being approached in that way. So, but yeah, it's definitely, you never anticipate enough to be, you know, people always surprise you.
Yeah, but also like if you're a female participant and you get some attention that you don't want to receive, probably like the knee-jerk reaction would be to leave the community. But I would ask you to give us another chance, right? So report that person and stick around because like, yeah, it's not appropriate. It's not an appropriate behavior. We do not encourage this behavior, so we would deal with this person, and we want to have a safe space where everyone can learn, share knowledge, and so on.
Yeah, and there are actually also enough. I think there are actually, that's something that I find actually also remarkable. Like I'm in a lot of communities as a woman in more techie space, and the percentage of women in DT, let's see, is actually quite high. So you can always reach out like to other women or like to me if you find me on there or to Alexi. Like, yeah. How did it come that you wrote the machine learning book? I think we've touched on that one a little bit. Do you want to talk about that one? Or?
Yeah. So I see we don't have a lot of time. I'll try to give a short answer. I don't think I am capable of giving short answers in general. I'll try. So like it's not my first book. So the first book. Well, this is a long story. I'll tell it anyways. So, well, some time ago, I was reviewing books for Pact Publishing. This is a publisher.
Yeah.
I was still transitioning from the Java developer to a data scientist. And they reached out to me saying, hey, we found your blog about Java and we have this book about Java. How about you review this book? And then I did that. I was a technical reviewer. Then I reviewed another book and then another book. And then I said, look, maybe you can start sending me machine learning books because this is what I'm more interested in. Mm. And they said, okay, here's a machine learning book. So they did not even try to check if I know this topic, which was cool. So by then, hopefully I learned enough of machine learning to be able to help. And I reviewed like, I don't know, 5 more maybe books about machine learning. And they wrote me saying, hey, you're so good at reviewing the books. Maybe you want to write one. And I thought, maybe I do. And they said, okay, like, looks like you know Java, you know machine learning. How about writing a book about Java and machine learning? And back then I thought it's a good idea. Don't do that. It's not a good idea. Because like, who cares about Java and machine learning? Everyone uses Python. But back then I thought it's a good idea. So I wrote a book. It was called Mastering Java for Data Science, something like that. I don't remember. Yeah, so that was my first book. Yeah, it's so usually when you write a book, the contract is that the publisher gives you some advance money, advance payment. Mm-hmm. And then like each sold copy, you get like some royalty, some percent. So with this book, it's still, they gave me some advance payment. And like the book still hasn't reached that point when it would break even. So like it's not selling well. But yeah, I would also expect more promotion from the publisher. But anyways, then there was another book that I wrote with co-authors. I wasn't alone there. It was like 4 or 5 authors. I did not like that book, so that's why I don't put it in my CV. It was about TensorFlow projects. So it was a book about doing projects with TensorFlow. So it was like 10 chapters and each chapter was a project. But funny thing is, like even though I did not like the book, I did not like the outcome, I did not like the process, so I wanted to pretend this book never happened. Funny thing is that people from a different publisher noticed that book and reached out to me saying, we saw this book, we really liked it. It was a surprise for me. Like, why would anyone like this? But they did. And they say, we want to have a similar book. How about you write this book? Mm. And we decided to come up with this concept that there is a chapter and every chapter is a project. And then by the end of this chapter, you have like a project that you can put in your portfolio. So this is how we came up with this concept. And I started writing this machine learning book camp. So this actually, it was their idea to name it like that. Somebody from marketing in Manning decided that, yeah, this is a good title. So it took 2 years, I think. So the Manning is really, they put a lot of effort in making sure that book has very good quality. Mm. So it was very painful.
Yeah.
Like all these processes, like they're there for a reason. But for me as an author, it was like, there are 10 more comments that I need to address. Like, I'm so tired. Like, why did I agree to this? Yeah, but finally, this book came out. And yeah, the rest of the story, you know, like how it became a course and so on.
That is pretty amazing. I didn't know that. But it also seems that your blog was kind of the starting point. So maybe.
Yeah, and it was in Russian. Like, I don't know how they found it.
Oh, my God. So, like, is that the take home? Like, if you want to start with publishing, start with a blog, maybe. And then I wanted to ask so at what stage of the publishing process were you reviewing for PACT?
It's like each chapter, like when each chapter was ready, they would send a draft and I would review the draft.
That's really early then.
Yeah. So it wasn't like, okay, here's a book, review it. It was like as the book was being written, each chapter, they would send each chapter to me. I would review, send back. And mining follows a different process. So instead of, so they have in-house technical reviewers who do this for each of the chapters. But then like there are 3 or 4 chapters and then it's sent to two people for reviewing, to not in-house reviewers. So the process is slightly different. But yeah, so it's for work in progress books.
Wow. Yeah, because there's also this Discord channel by Pact where you can, so they have these giveaways where you get books and you, but they're like finished, like basically you're the reviewer from the public, so you can get them and you kind of read them and then write a short review. And
Amazon, right?
I'm not sure. No, it's like, no, that you send it back to Pact basically. So you send it back to them and they just need it. So it's the last stage before it gets published, basically.
Okay.
So they solicit like feedback from the community, basically. But it's a good way to get like books for free, basically. So I've done that a couple of times. So that's why I was interested.
Well, there are good books on Pact.
Yeah.
So definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. So then congratulations on your huge success, Alexei. Is there anything you would love to do but didn't have the time to do it?
Oh, yeah. I think I have a list somewhere with all these ideas that I wanted to try but never managed. Yeah, like, for example, doing a hackathon, one thing that comes to mind.
Yep.
So, for example, in the courses, we have a lot of questions, and these questions are so repetitive. Like, and we have FAQ documents where all these questions are already answered, or most of these questions. So there was an idea to somehow automate it and make a hackathon about this.
Write a bot.
But interestingly, even without running a proper hackathon, some community members, one of them is Alex, so he came up with this idea, hey, how about I do this myself? And then he, when he reached out, it was already a working thing, saying, hey, I did this, how about we now test it?
Wow.
It was so cool, yeah. And yeah, it's working fine. So it was, he did this for the MLOps course. And now he's doing this for the ML course, ML engineering course. So it's really cool and it works quite well. So the bot would see that, the bot would look at the question and then look at all the, of course, it uses LLMs. It would look at all the other questions in the FAQ document and say, okay, like for this question, this is the answer.
That is cool.
And it's like, this typical use case for LLMs where you have some knowledge base and you have a question and you want to retrieve the answer to this question from this knowledge base. And he wrote a post on LinkedIn saying, what is the stack behind that? So it's a really cool project.
Wow.
So I wanted to make a hackathon, but never managed, but then it just happened. Another thing is like all these events we have, we use Eventbrite. I don't really like Eventbrite for, it's not the most convenient platform. But the cool thing about Eventbrite is that it stores the emails of each person who registered. So what we can do with this is build a recommender system that saying, okay, like this person would be interested in these events. And for example, when there is a new event, we potentially can see which community members would be interested in this event, this particular one, and then send emails or somehow notify them about this. Of course, we need to think like about, you know, opting out, opting into that.
Yeah.
But as an idea, this is what we have. And in addition to that, like I don't really like Eventbrite, so maybe creating something in Django for managing events would be another thing. So it could be another hackathon project.
Mm.
But then like with so many things already happening, it's always hard to find time to squeeze in one extra thing. But maybe, like, if anyone of you is listening to this and you like this idea of a hackathon, maybe you can reach out to us and we see, like, how we can make it happen.
Yeah, hackathons are also, they're amazing, but they're just the epiphany of time and intensive, right? Like, because you sign up for a couple of days, basically, right, of your life, if you want to do it like that. But they're very cool. I've done several hackathons and I love it. But, like, yeah. It's definitely easier when you're a student because then you can just be missing for like a couple of years.
So maybe we can do one more question.
Yeah. How do you evaluate the success of the efforts of the initiative and purpose?
Okay. There are a few metrics that I look at. So in terms of bringing money, the most... the most effective thing is our newsletter. So if you're subscribed to our newsletter, you probably saw that there is a sponsored block in the newsletter. This is how maybe like 50-60% of money that we earn in Datadog Lab, this is where it comes from. So for us, the number of subscribers who open the the email is an important metric because it directly translates to money. So this is what I look at. And when it's growing and people keep opening the email, despite the fact that there's this sponsored block, that's really good. And this is what I personally look at. Then, of course, the number of people in the community. But it's also, like right now, it's almost 40,000. But it's also like the other interesting metric is the number of active people. Mm-hmm. So, of course, not all 40,000 are active. So somebody comes for the course, they take the course and leave the community, which is totally fine. Or somebody comes and finds out, okay, this I'm not really interested in this community and leave. This is also fine. But looking at the number of active people is another metric that I look at. And also like engagement in social media. This is something I think quite important because social media helps us bring new people to the community. YouTube views. So if content is interesting, usually a stream has more YouTube views, more views on YouTube than like non-interesting content. So then we get these signals to see like what really resonates with the community. So yeah, and then again, another big thing is, do sponsors willing to give us money, right?
Yeah.
So do they find this community attractive for them to actually give us money? That's probably the main success criteria, I would say. So if they do, then we're doing something useful because there are companies who want to support us.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, so I think we have maxed out the hour. There's two more questions left, but maybe you can answer them in Slack or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Cool. That was really super interesting. I've been around for quite a bit, but I've learned a lot. I hope it was interesting to the community. Thanks, everyone, for submitting your questions and for the participation. And next time, you will see Alexi again in the kind of host chair and me behind the scenes, probably.
Totally. And probably we need to invite you for another interview.
Oh, yeah. I can talk about...
This has been a while.
It has been a while. And I can talk about like the liberal weed kind of policy in the Netherlands.
Okay. That would be unusual, but interesting. Okay. Thanks, Johanna, a lot for joining us today and being the host for this interview. It was very fun.
It was a lot of fun. Cool. All right.
Well, bye, everyone. Have a great week.
Bye, everyone. Bye.